Thanks for listening to Star Lores. If you like the show, please consider subscribing and giving a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also help us make more great content by becoming a patron at www.patreon.com. We would also love to hear from you on social media. You can follow Star Lores on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Enjoy the show, and may the Force be with you.
You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
The dark side will devour those who lack the power to control it. It's a fierce storm of emotion that annihilates anything in its path. It lays waste to the weak and the unworthy. But those who are strong can ride the storm winds to unfathomable heights. They can unlock their true potential. They can sever the chains that bind them. They can dominate the world around them. Only those with the power to control the dark side can ever truly be free.
The teachings of Sith philosophy are a mix of ethno-religious and distinct cultural origins. The Sith draw their power from the dark side of the Force, primal emotions such as fear, hate, and passion. Sith philosophy teaches the pursuit of power and individual self-interest and the domination of the weak. The Sith are not the sole heirs to the dark side of the Force, but like the Jedi, are one of the oldest and most prominent sect of dark side Force users in the galaxy.
The group who would be called the Sith are descendants of the first Dark Jedi, an offshoot of the Jedi, and have become the primary antagonist of the Jedi Order. First outcast by their former colleagues following the Great Schism, a war between the Jedi followers of the Light and the followers of the Dark Side, the fallen Jedi fled to a planet Korriban, home of the naturally Force-attuned species of humanoids known as the Sith, from which their philosophy would take its name. The Sith species had already developed a culture around the dark side of the Force, which would complement the new arrivals. The word Sith comes from the word Sith Auri, meaning Lord or Overlord in their tongue, and was adopted as a moniker for the powerful dark side users who pursued power at any cost. The Dark Jedi exiles conquered and interbred with the Sith and cultivated their savage and brutal culture into the belief system. The Sith would go on to expand as an empire, conquer worlds, and adopt or enslave other groups and species into their philosophy, and would come into conflict with the Jedi and the Republic on numerous occasions over a millennia to come.
If you seek to aid everyone that suffers in the galaxy, you will only weaken yourself and weaken them. It is the internal struggles, when fought and won on their own, that yield the strongest rewards. You stole that struggle from them, cheapened it.
Sith philosophy teaches that conflict is the ultimate test of an individual's and society's strength, and would often cultivate opportunities to start conflict and use it to evolve. Lack of conflict led to weakness, and weakness to decline and destruction. Conflict also weeded out the strong and the weak, and stratified a social hierarchy where the strongest would rule and the weak would submit or be killed off, thus strengthening the remainder as a whole. Individualism, self-reliance, and the pursuit of power were core tenets of the Sith, who believed in cultivating one's personal strength and ability to dominate others, their circumstances, and their environment. Through power, an individual could assert their own freedom and agency to act as they will, unbound and free of any moral obligations, and prevent those who would subjugate them from being able to assert their dominance instead. The Sith despised pity and believed the weak deserved whatever fate befell them. Selflessness, virtue, and any moral code that impeded the attainment of power were seen as detrimental and allowed a Sith to act without restraint or regard for others, Passion, pain, anger, and the will to dominate, fear, anger, hatred, and greed were all permissible and encouraged. Rivalries and strife were often encouraged amongst the Sith students to reinforce the tenets of the dark side. Passion and strong basic emotions are regarded as natural and necessary for survival in a cold and uncaring galaxy. Strong emotions, often translated into greater primal connection with the Force, which could unlock greater powers or, conversely, bent the Force into an instrument of their will. Although the Sith lauded the power of emotion, they ascribed strength to those who were able to control their emotions and channel them to their own ends, and considered it weakness to those who allowed themselves to be dominated by their emotions. Because of the ideological extremes of the Sith, their pursuit of conflict, and their diametric opposition to the teachings of the Jedi, it made them natural enemies. Love was regarded with suspicion. Paradoxically, as the Jedi discouraged love for its potential for self-interest because of attachment, the Sith discouraged love for its self-sacrifice and prioritization of others over the self, becoming a weakness. Though, Sith lovers were not uncommon or unheard of.
Eventually, the Sithari came to become a legendary prophetic messiah for the Sith, who would destroy the Sith and resurrect them in their most powerful state. Not unlike the fabled Chosen One of Jedi prophecy, the Sithari would be the perfect embodiment of the Sith philosophy and be an avatar of strength and power unrivaled. Beyond the basic tenets of the Sith, one Sith Lord, Darth Bane, instituted the infamous Rule of Two, centuries after the rise and fall of numerous Sith empires and large Sith armies. In the wake of the last new Sith War and the destruction of the Sith armies of the Brotherhood of Darkness, Bane instituted the Rule of Two as a means to concentrate Sith power after seeing the failure of the diluted doctrine spread over the masses of the Army of Darkness and its incessant weakness as the Sith inevitably fought themselves as much as the Jedi or the Republic. He would divest all the knowledge and teachings of the Sith into one individual, and for that individual to pass on his teachings into a single pupil, who, if and when strong enough, will overthrow his master, guaranteeing a legacy of increasing skill and strength as each successive generation overthrows the last. When the time is right and at the crux of the Sith's power, the implementation of the Rule of Two had caused the Sith to begin operating in a clandestine manner and had led the Jedi to believe they had become extinct. The Rule of Two was maintained, to an extent, into the fall of the Republic and the rise of the Galactic Empire, but would eventually be cast aside in favor of a new doctrine in the years after the resurrection of the Republic. In the twilight of the New Republic and the rise of a new Sith order, they instituted the Rule of One. A single Sith tyrant would rule over a host of lesser Sith. Unlike the Jedi, the Sith are highly political in their beliefs, and often institute empire building and slavery in their wake as their teaching justified the subjugation of the weak. This has led to innumerable conflicts over a millennia against the Galactic Republic and the Jedi.
Not unlike the Jedi, Sith teachings could be summarized by a code that outlined their beliefs.
Peace is a lie. There is only passion. Through passion, I gain strength. Through strength, I gain power. Through power, I gain victory. Through victory, my chains are broken. The Force shall set me free.
Authored by the former Jedi, Sorsus Sin, the Sith Code has been around since the first exiled Jedi. The Sith Code, or Quatsazijak in the Sith language, was meant to contradict the Jedi teachings and reinforce the hierarchy of power that the Sith sought to attain. The code has been interpreted in a number of ways.
Both. Conflict forces one to better oneself. It forces change, growth, adaption, evolution, or death. These are not our...
Peace is a lie. There is only passion. The first line directly contradicts the Jedi code. It warns of the weakness that arises in the absence of conflict. Like passion, they were seen as natural forces and did not need to change them.
It is our goal to be stronger, to achieve our potential and not rest upon our laurels. We are the seekers, not the shepherds.
Through passion, I gain strength. Through strength, I gain power. A denouncement of Jedi altruism, the focus of the Sith is to gain strength or power. It is also the first in a series of self-centered claims that reflect the egoism of the Sith. It is the self that is most important. Power to Sith is a zero-sum game. Your lack of power necessitates that others will gain from it.
An achievement. Unless the victory is achieved by demonstrating that your power is superior, it is only an illusion, temporary at best. We seek more.
Through power, I gain victory. Victory is a proof of power. And only in victory do you demonstrate your superiority.
More than that. One who has freed themselves from all restrictions has reached perfection, their potential fulfilled. Perfect strength, perfect power, perfect destiny. Imagine it.
Through victory, my chains are broken. A point of contention among Sith scholars, some held that the chains were symbolic of any restraint that a person can be liberated from. The power of others, self-restraint, or imposed restrictions by other belief systems, which can also be seen as total freedom. Perfection and passion, strength and power, were an ever-distant goal that all Sith would work towards. Perfect attainment would be embodied in the Sithari.
The Force is our servant and our master, our teacher and our companion, a weapon and a tool. Know it, and you know the universe. Master it, and you master the universe. Strive for perfection, and the Force shall reward you. The Force is strong.
The Force shall free me. Ultimate power meant ultimate freedom. Unrestrained by societal expectation, morality, or others, the Sith would use the power of the Force to be free to do as they pleased. Many Sith, on their quest for power and narcissism, would become preoccupied with immortality, as death was the final frontier and arch nemesis of self-preservation. The Sith Code was adopted very early in the history of the Sith, and its tenets were taught to Sith acolytes for millennia.
I will show you true mastery of the dark side.
Sith utilized the dark side of the Force through their emotions to further their power, although non-Force sensitives could also adhere to general Sith tenets. They would rarely be as powerful as someone who had mastery of the Force, and so would either serve the Sith as slaves or common soldiers, but could never become a Sith Lord. It often granted the Sith special talents, often serving as a temptation for non-dark side users looking to access these unique abilities. The quest for power often demanded a payment in return, and the dark side of the Force would often weather a person's physical appearance if they were unable to master it. It often would create a craving or addiction that would seduce even non-dark side users. Like Sith, who were unable to master their emotions, those who could not control the dark side instead of letting it control them were considered weak. Like the Jedi, the Sith are not the only users of the dark side, and many other species, cults, and individuals can draw from the dark side of the Force without being labeled as Sith, which pertains to this specific ideology. The Sith used the Force as a tool and developed unique ways of harnessing its energy for their own purposes. Sith alchemy and sorcery became distinct disciplines beyond the normal repertoire of a regular Force user.
The Sith do not generally adhere to a single mode of dress, yet specific themes and styles have become prominent throughout apparel. Appearance often signaled an identity and was an important part of building an outward presence. Sith could personalize their appearance to reflect wealth and stature, to hide in shadows, or to exude fear and menace. The early Sith Empire, Sith Lords, would often dress in opulent robes, bright colors such as red and green, and expensive silks and ornamented armor, lavish capes and headdresses that all symbolized the Lord's wealth and status. Such showings often generated hate, greed, jealousy, and lust in their rivals. Because the Sith valued personal wealth, They would often imbue their robes, jewelry, and artifacts with dark side energy that could enhance their natural force abilities. They would bind their souls and influence future wearers. Sith often valued personal protection and could don heavy battle armor, often full suits of interlocking plates of various metals, used not only for defense, but also to intimidate their opponents. This armor was often dark and would usually feature offensive features such as spikes and spines, which complemented the aggressive fighting style of the Sith. Their armor could also double as a life support system or bind itself with the wearer on a spiritual level. Armor was often used to enhance a Sith warrior's physical attributes, augmenting their strength, toughness, and vitality, yet usually encumbering the wearer and sometimes limiting force abilities or acrobatic skills. Robes often fashioned in the likeness of their Jedi counterparts, Sith robes provided wearers with an acrobatic freedom and often included a cloak and hood to conceal the wearer's identity. Robes were often dark or black in color, as previously mentioned, could be made of expensive fabrics or imbued with dark side energy. Sometimes armor was incorporated with robes. These articles of clothing were less restrictive and could allow a Sith to fully embrace their natural agility and athleticism. Popularized after the implementation of the Rule of Two as the Sith went into hiding and simple dark robes best facilitated their new modus operandi. Sometimes, instead of grandiose robes of the past, Sith would wear robes made of rough, uncomfortable materials as reminders or irritants to maintain a constant aura of pain, irritation, and anger. Because the Sith Empire could incorporate non-force users into its fighting ranks, Sith armor and apparel could also be issued to the common soldiery in the form of uniforms. Although very specific to specific items, armies and rulers, each set and style of uniforms would be very distinct from the era from which they existed. Sith soldiers were generally outfitted with heavy armor composed of multiple plates and would usually be dark or black, but at other times were represented by red and even a silver polish. Officers often wore formal dress outfits and regular military accoutrements. Peaked and forage caps and varied in style and color based on their historical period.
The Sith often marked their allegiance in the form of tattoos, which could be as small as a single mark on the forehead or encapsulate the entirety of one's body. Falling in and out of favor in the various eras, Sith tattoos were sometimes widely used or forgone as a practice altogether. Tattoos also helped to intimidate an enemy and were often black, white, or red in color. They were applied in a painful ceremony by way of a Sith pincer bug, a native anthropod of the planet Zyost, whose pain-inducing venom was used to create the markings.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
The Jedi and Sith utilized the lightsaber as their traditional weapon. Its utility is unsurpassed. The weapons of both factions were very similar, and it was the Sith and the followers of the dark side of the Force who initially created the weapon. The hilt of the lightsaber was often more brutal, garish, and aggressive in design compared to their Jedi counterparts, and they almost always utilized a synthetic crystal, whose attributes could be shaped and molded by the Maker, and the Sith weapon usually produced a red blade. The Sith are also credited with the design of the first double-bladed lightsaber, sometimes itself referred to as a Sith lightsaber, which complemented the aggressive and highly lethal combat style of the Sith, although the design was eventually adopted by some Jedi as well. Due to the cutthroat Sith ideology, many lords jealously guarded the secrets of their power, which led to a culture steeped in symbolism and iconography. A number of high-profile Sith lords and empires have adopted various sigils to denote their faction.
The Sith often lacked a single, timeless, central authority and would instead either be a tenuously unified coalition or serve under a tyrant, king, or emperor, and only a lord and apprentice when the Rule of Two was instituted. As such, the Sith often had various ranks that had a general description rather than a strict role, and often could don multiple titles. Regardless of what hierarchy was instituted, when a Sith became powerful enough to impose themselves as a ruler, everyone else either submitted or became a rival, oftentimes becoming both. The Sith used many ranks within their various militaries and imperial organizations outside of the Force-wielding adherents.
Darth, the most well-known title of the Sith. Darth is often added to or used in conjunction with a new name of a Sith Lord. Although the exact meaning of the title is debated, some believe Darth is a contracted form of Dark Lord of the Sith, but this is not confirmed. Others speculate that its origins lay in the Rakatan words for Emperor or Daritha, or the conjoined words Triumph and Conquest or Dar, and Death, Ta, suggesting the title of Darth means Triumph or Conquest over Death, or Immortal, or could also be interpreted as Conquest through Death, referencing the Sith's brutal nature. Others dispute this origin still, leaving the term's ultimate meaning in dispute. It's only known that this term has been a byword for the Sith for many millennia.
Dark Lord of the Sith. Essentially a title given to the highest, strongest, and most powerful Sith practitioners. The Dark Lords have numbered anywhere from handfuls to individuals throughout galactic history, but always remained at the top of whatever hierarchy they established.
Sith Lords. Powerful Sith who also attained a high level of leadership and fear, Sith Lords often used underlings and slaves to accomplish tasks, yet remained some of the most fearsome combatants and force users in their own right. At times, they could convene and rule as part of a council or act under a supreme Dark Lord of the Sith.
Sith Master. Mimicking the Jedi rank, when the Rule of Two was implemented, the leading Sith Lord would become a master and would take on a single apprentice to imbue his knowledge.
Sith Apprentice, Acolyte, or Adept. A Sith student taken under the tutelage of a master, the apprentice was exposed to cruelty and a dangerous life, doing their master's bidding, learning and craving their master's knowledge and power. It was the duty of the apprentice to survive and eventually kill their master, proving themselves the strongest and worthy enough to carry on the Sith tradition. In so doing, the Sith philosophy as a whole would too become stronger for it.
These ranks and titles were not universally applied to all Sith orders, and most developed their own unique stylings, methods of trainings, and specializations and hierarchies. The Sith, before the Rule of Two, often developed training academies to teach aspirants, kidnapping young force sensitives, recruiting from subjugated populations, or adopting fallen Jedi or other dark side force users. The Sith often created large, multiplex tombs where their souls would haunt long after their deaths. These tombs would usually contain some form of esoteric knowledge. As empire builders, the Sith would often build citadels and fortifications from which to rule, each unique to a particular era, civilization, or reflected personal tastes of a Sith Lord. Many Sith academies, tombs, palaces, and ruins can be found across the galaxy. From remote planets and moons to populous urban centers, sometimes they exist as prominent landmarks as testaments to the power of a past or are hidden as occult vaults of forbidden knowledge. They often incorporate statues and homages to an individual lord's glory and conquests, and are often booby-trapped and guarded against would-be usurpers. The years of practice of the dark side would leave a lasting presence in the Force energy at these locations. Architecture would be dark and oppressive, grotesque and gargantuan to emphasize a Sith Lord's presence and power. Some of the most notable Sith worlds include Korriban, Yavin 4, and Zyost.
Once more, the Sith will rule the galaxy. And we shall have peace.
Ever since the violent civil wars of the early Jedi to the ancient Sith kingdoms, the Sith have been one of the greatest antagonistic forces within the galaxy, often the source of great political upheaval or challenging the democratic order of the galaxy, the Sith have taken on a number of forms, from small cults on backwater worlds to galaxy-spanning empires, or clandestine agents working within the Galactic Republic. The Sith and their philosophy are a living embodiment of conflict within the many Star Wars. So with all this talk of power and emotion, fear is often a divisive emotion among Sith, I suppose. Count Dooku is quoted as saying that a Sith has no fear, but often, other times, Jedi or other detractors say fear is the first step to the dark side. So how can it be both or neither? Is Dooku wrong, or is he contradicting other Sith teachings? What's going on there?
It does seem somewhat contradictory, but fear, even in our own human psyches, can be applied in a lot of different ways. Like, one of the ways we can sort of leverage fear against people, almost as a tool, right? So if you're, say, like an MMA fighter, oftentimes they do this kind of thing where they peacock, right? And they put their chest out and they make themselves look scary or intimidating.
Yeah, which you even see in like nature, like animals often totally. Do the same thing.
Yeah.
Scare off an enemy.
Yeah, yeah. So it could be a thing to not necessarily be afraid, but to instill fear in others.
Yeah, and that's totally in line with how the Sith, you know, like their tattoos, their heavy armor, often spiky, dark, like they're intentionally trying to cause you to be scared of them.
Yeah,
for
there,
sure.
There is like even the dark side, like influences your actual physical appearance, right? So and it's almost like a scary thing. So you wonder, like, maybe in the world, in the universe, is like your body adapting to the dark side in that way for, it's like a mechanism to instill fear in others. Just a thought.
Yeah, but, it could be. Yeah, like the red glowing eyes.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, shriveled.
The kind of appearance. Gaunt look. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It could almost be like warning, you know, like a warning to others, right? The same way like a poisonous snake might, you know, totally, have bright colors or something like that.
Yeah.
Or a poisonous frog. Yeah, that's one way to look at it. I think another way is in kind of in line with what you're saying about being a natural tool. Fear also could be a natural emotion that we feel and use, again, in like a nature setting, because the Sith value, like, I guess, a natural order is... like when you are scared, you have like an adrenaline rush, or you seek to like your instincts are all for self-preservation, which very much is in line with Sith doctrine, right? It's all about the self and preserving
the self.
And that's
very antithetical to the Jedi order as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you could see how it would lead to the dark side.
Yeah, and it's very instinctual and primal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To you know, be scared of something and then to turn around and attack it, right?
It can
make you more aggressive. Like, have you seen an animal that's scared? They fight harder. They are way more...
It's kind of fight or flight, but the primary motivation, like you said, is like self-preservation.
Yeah.
And you're doing it only for your own good in that very moment.
Yeah, exactly, right? So it's not like a Sith is like cowardly and afraid.
Yeah.
They are just using it as a tool as well. The other thing, I guess, is fear as a gateway to the dark side. So, you know, you're just a normal guy and you let like your insecurities and fears kind of take hold of you and you search for a way to overcome them. So that's kind of the path of the dark side. You're looking for power. Like, you're the bullied kid who wants to find a way to beat your bullies. So you kind of sell your soul to the dark side, per se, right? You're scared of them and use that fear to drive you to do something else or to seek another path, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that has like real world implications too, like the metaphorical dark side in our own minds, like the things that we'll do when we're afraid is often not the most rational thing,
or something we would even consider like, oh, I would never do something like that,
something
kind of
it could be even immoral, right? Or but fear. And it can, once you do like a behavior, you establish like neural pathways in your brains, and it becomes easier and easier to do that behavior. And and fear, so like fear produces high amounts, like it produces adrenaline for one, but adrenaline also produces high amounts of cortisol, which is like the stress hormone, right? And when you get that hormone flowing through your body, you start developing neural pathways that make you develop habits and behaviors that would be maybe not necessarily bad, but not necessarily good. Oftentimes people associate it with like negative behaviors or behaviors that they wouldn't want. Like, so like fear kind of gets you into, like, say if you have lots of social anxiety and you start drinking to quell that social anxiety, right? Like that's a way of handling fear, and it sort of brings out this quote unquote dark side behavior out of you. And then, you know, 10 years down the road, you're a raging alcoholic, right?
Because it's what you use as a method of dealing with it.
And
just also the same on the, kind of a similar path is like eventually down the path of the dark side, because it's like a gateway. Maybe it's not fear itself that's driving you anymore. It's everything else that's overtaking you. You now have that lust for power that, like, say you turned around and beat up your bullies, or, you know, drinking has become your habit. It's not that you're drinking now in social situations, you're drinking all the time. You know, you're not scared of anyone anymore because you beat the biggest, strongest bully, and now you're the biggest, strongest bully, right? So it could just be the gateway, the first step on the path, but not necessarily the one that will haunt you all the way. And kind of in contrast to that, fear is often just an unconscious force too, right? And again, in line with the embracing of primal instincts by the dark side, you can't always control when you're scared, right? And it's a natural thing, and the Sith would often probably advocate for a natural emotion, right? Any emotion that gets them fired up and like makes their dark side energy more powerful. But I think across all of it, or I guess another thing to do in regards to self-preservation would also be the preservation of loved ones, being scared for other people, right? So like if you have a spouse or a child who might be in danger, you use the fear of what might happen to them to propel you to do something. And that could be heroism, or it could be something completely out of line. Anakin, I think, is guilty of this one. Anakin doesn't seem so much scared for himself. He often undertakes lots of harrowing missions and things like that. He's often like done very heroic things that risked his own life. And like he seems very, I don't know what the word is, like he doesn't care. Like he's maybe overconfident in his abilities, but he doesn't seem scared of death for himself. But once Padme gets involved, then he becomes scared. Once his mom is involved, then he's worried about death, right? Which is another fear.
So like many Sith back in the day were, like the ancient Sith would often seek immortality. So most likely it was, my thinking is that this was some kind of fear of death. And that is one of the most, I think, primal things that almost everyone experiences.
Like it's instinctual, like the animals, like the thing that drives them is fear of death.
It's survival, right? It's to survive. And even in like our modern context, we're constantly, society is constantly trying to, it's actually like most of our technological advances, medical advances, but even beyond that, are driven on the very base level by a drive to survive, right? And so you even think about, like, let's say transportation innovations, like those are still somewhat driven by this kind of survival instinct, because you're trying to figure out how to do things more efficiently. So you develop a car, right? And then that can make your life better, because the amount of prosperity that happens from developing a transportation system and so on and so forth. It's sort of, there's this embedding like survival instinct underlying.
You just go grocery shopping and it becomes easier, or you use it for farming and transporting large amounts of food to the grocery store. So
It is sort of, it is interesting, like this fear of death. And even like I've read some interesting theories from some like physicists and stuff who actually believe that there's a way that one day, like, humans can actually live forever. Like, there's ways you can make your cells regenerate in such a way that they wouldn't degrade over time.
Yeah.
And so you would avoid getting, like, all the late life diseases like cancer and stuff. Like, there are actually some people who are, in a scientific way, pursuing eternal life.
Yeah.
And that's kind of interesting because that's, like, a very religious idea that is, like, very ancient in us, and we're still pursuing that. We're just
finding different methods.
Yeah, we're sort of trying to make it. It's sort of scientism, right? Like, it's trying to make it rational. But you see that
it's driven by the same motive.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And you can only imagine with an energy like the Force that can be manipulated in all sorts of interesting and different ways.
Yeah. And it's very connection to life itself.
Precisely, like, life cannot exist without the Force in the Star Wars universe. So
the Sith want to manipulate that to extend their life and hopefully attain immortality themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, in the Star Wars Legends universe, you see this with Palpatine, right? Like, he has all these clones that he keeps going into and sort of keeps being able to extend his life. But you do see this very visceral sort of fear of death or wanting to live forever. But I don't know if... I guess it's not always driven by fear. It does seem like a lot of it is driven by power, and there's only so much you can do in one life. You know, there's only so much you can conquer.
I just want to live longer so I can do more.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I would think, like, immortality has always been connected to a fear of death or the desire for immortality.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think across all spectrums, or like maybe ideas that, and different Sith might believe different reasons, right? Some might like think fear is just a total weakness and should be like expunged.
Yeah.
Others might embrace it as like a source for their power.
Yeah.
Because the Sith are very individualistic and might take their own kind of take on it. But I think across the board, they're all opposed to letting fear control you because they're all about independence and freedom.
Yeah.
And when you're controlled by fear, when you're like are an anxious wreck, right? That's antithetical to Sith teaching.
Totally.
Right? Where you're being controlled.
Yeah. And I kind of wonder, like, with the Sith, having like completely conquering your fear, that's actually can almost lead to a certain kind of new chaos because you now no longer have any, reservations about sort of taking, exactly, about taking risk. And it does seem that, a lot of times in Star Wars stories, when you have a certain amount of power, those kind of people, like, they almost don't have any fear because of their unbridled power, but that almost is what does them in, right?
Yeah, it's almost like a, I can't think of the word, but it's the very thing that
they begin to underestimate everything else because they believe their own hype, right?
Yeah.
And then they become so powerful
that they're not afraid of anything
until
that thing ends up destroying them.
And fear is like a survival mechanism. Like I said before, like in all animals and humans, like we have this, we get this adrenal cortisol response that is supposed to preserve our survival, right? Like if we're walking down a street and a car flips around the corner coming at, 100 kilometers an hour, we should be afraid of that, and
you should get out of the
way. Yeah, you should get out of the way, right? Like that, you should be afraid of that. You're supposed to be afraid of that. But if you the question becomes if you
think you're invincible.
Yeah, you literally think you're invincible. You think you're so powerful that can't even hurt you. It'll just like it'll get crushed, but you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, that's almost like the delusion that maybe some of the Sith live in, right? Like they believe they're impervious to damage of any kind.
Yeah, and I think you see a lot of hubris in the Sith, and
totally.
Often it's what leads to their downfall, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's probably the only probably their major weakness is that lack of fear, even though fear in a way can lead them to the dark side.
Yeah. It's also their undoing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, that's a cool discussion. I don't know if our listeners have their own input on that. Now kind of switching gears here. There's another quote about the Sith made by Obi-Wan in Revenge of the Sith, where he says, "Only a Sith deals in absolutes." I find it a very ironic statement, mostly because that statement itself is an absolute statement.
That's true, yeah. I actually never thought about that, yeah, but you're right.
it's almost kind of semantics, but yeah. I don't know if that's entirely true. I think Obi-Wan is trying to get at like more of a embracing, like a plurality kind of view with the Jedi, where they like embrace all kinds of ideas and things, as long as they don't openly contradict Jedi philosophy. But even then, it's hard to say, because the Jedi seem pretty firm in certain beliefs.
Yeah.
Whereas the Sith are actually seem more liberated. They seem more free in their teachings and their beliefs.
Yeah.
Where,
yeah.
You know, they don't, you know, necessarily believe in an absolute way of doing things, because they're all individuals and
yeah,
all pursue the same thing, you know, like they're all pursuing power, but in their own ways.
Yeah. I think maybe like maybe it's more like the goals of the Sith are very different, and it's like you get there by any means necessary.
Right.
Whereas like the Jedi are not that way.
Yeah.
They won't sort of defy their own conscience, where the Sith don't have a conscience. So it's like just, yeah, by any means necessary, you achieve your goals and grasp and maintain your power. Which is like actually like an interesting, I think, commentary even like on their whole political structure, and why it is either so revolutionary or it can be so tyrannical, right?
Yeah.
Because the whole goal is to achieve power. And I think even like in, that's sort of like an interesting commentary on human, like in the real world, like, people are constantly, it seems to be like a constant sort of, it's one group struggling against another group for power, right? And
yeah,
it seems like people sort of eventually they forget about their principles, and it's more about just
winning,
achieving and holding that power, right? So maybe that's more what Obi-Wan was alluding to, that it was like, it's like
the state of absolute power is like the goal of all Sith, and you know, the path to that is destructive.
Yeah
Interesting. Okay
But I don't know if you had any more thoughts on that.
Not really. It's just the statement itself seems like it was made in a very critical moment of the movies, and it seemed like a very deep thought, but I don't know if they just threw it in there because it sounded,
you know,
cool.
That could totally be the case, and all my pontificating about it.
Yeah, just you're like, reading too deeply.
Yeah, you're just like, it's like, no, they just needed like something.
Throwaway line. Yeah. Yeah, it's possible. All right. And the final kind of point for discussion, are the Sith inherently evil? They're often depicted as the bad guys in the Star Wars universe, and their philosophy is definitely very antagonistic, I would say. You know, definitely if you're taking the view of the Jedi. But can there be good Sith? That's my question. Like, is the ideology itself evil?
Yeah, I think it's sort of like, I think it's one of those things that it's not necessarily in certain contexts, but it can very easily become very tyrannical. And actually, so can the light side of the Force, or the Jedi Order. They can become very tyrannical in their beliefs, and like them following their beliefs,
their code.
So yeah, their code so strictly can like in many cases lead to the deaths of many millions of people that could have possibly been avoided had they just, you know, rejected their code for 5 minutes.
Yeah. When they become like ideologically driven.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, it is a sort of a weird define good, maybe.
That's more difficult.
Yeah.
I think just within the, let's avoid like real world politics here for a second, but in the context of the Star Wars universe.
Yes.
Sure. The Sith, I guess, do have a tendency towards violence and extermination, which is their ideology gone too far.
Yeah.
But I think on an individual basis, like simple self-improvement often stems from the way the Sith view themselves, yeah, right? Totally. The Jedi are like, accept yourself for the way you are, where the Sith are like, no, you can always be better. You can always do better. You can always be more powerful, right?
Well, there is even the thing of like the whole idea of like the Jedi sort of, the Jedi try to pursue the state the Jedi want is no conflict. And that's the Sith want conflict because they want to be stronger. And that's like, that's actually like a relatively, I mean, we don't maybe say it that way, but like we know, like, you know, if we lift weights, if we want to get stronger, we have to actually tear our muscles, you know, that kind of thing where you, if you want to actually become better, you have to
make sacrifices and it necessitates a kind of conflict.
Yeah, you have to have some kind of you have to sort of slay the symbolic dragon, if you will. You know, like there's that there, you sort of need an enemy, and whether that enemy is an external force or an internal force, you actually need like something in conflict with you, otherwise you can't,
it won't drive you to change.
You'll maintain the status quo, right? You won't adapt properly,
right? Which is like a fundamental tenet of evolution, I suppose.
I guess so.
The other thing too is in kind of in line with that, the Sith's propensity towards violence, like nowhere in their code is it written that they have to exterminate the weak. That I think that's someone else taking the foundational beliefs and running with it, you know. They're extrapolating their own ideas, whereas like it could be totally about self-improvement and individualism, right? And and freedom from, you know, tyranny of others, which sounds like very Western democratic values. Kind of looked at through a different lens, I suppose.
No, it is true. It's almost like a kind of like a maybe a radical individualist, like Ayn Randian kind of philosophy, you know. And that is, you know, and that's, like I said, that's not necessarily, like, in a vacuum, a bad thing.
If you, if you're not a consequentialist and, you know, whatever stems from that path.
You
don't care about, but.
And, you know, you do wonder if, like, if the Sith, let's say in a hypothetical world, if the Sith like no longer existed, if you could actually exterminate all of them,
which incidentally has been attempted by the Jedi on multiple occasions. So who are the bad guys now?
To go genocidal. And that, sometimes I wish that was like, and there's probably some Star Wars stories that deal more with the ambivalence of that, and like that it's not exactly black and white, even though like we're talking about the dark and the light side.
I think those are just good terms for like simplicity. And that's my point, right? Like, are the Sith inherently evil? Are they, is the dark side inherently wrong?
And my other question is like, can the Sith like be compassionate even?
Yeah, even to an extreme level. Because if the Jedi are supposed to divorce themselves from emotions, including like passionate ideas, right? Like good ideas, like ideas like supposed like fighting against slavery, for example,
You
know, with the same fervor that I guess people today try to, you know.
Would they just like rather than just trying to stop the slave trade, they would go and find every single person who ever bought or sold a slave and just slaughter them, right? Like I don't know, like it's just,
but
like,
just even being passionate about something, right? Like a lot of us, even if it's like a hobby or something that you truly value, you know, to go the extra mile for that or to invest in that, right? Where the Jedi are like no attachment, right?
Well, there is even, you know, with Vader, because I remember even in like Return of the Jedi, he was trying to get Luke to turn to the dark side and he was bringing him to Palpatine. And there's like that scene where they're in the second Death Star and he's like almost trying to, it's almost like he actually had like compassion on his son and he like loved his son and he wanted what was best for his son. It wasn't just just hatred and
There were other feelings buried deep in his core.
That's what it seemed like. Almost that was like Vader's motivation, you know, and that's why he didn't like just kill Luke right away. You know, he wanted to try, you know, maybe I guess you could argue that was just because they wanted like a more powerful empire. There's a lot involved with that.
Yeah, yeah. Or like him trying to use Luke to turn on Palpatine later.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So who knows? But it did, like, it did seem like, at least the movie did. That's almost how the movie portrayed it. Was almost like Vader wanted, for Luke's own sake, he wanted him to go to the dark side.
Yeah, because, I definitely can get that vibe from especially in Cloud City too.
Yeah,
it seems more of an emotional plea.
Yeah, totally.
Than it is like, I'm the bad guy and I'm gonna make you a bad guy too. It's more like, come join me and we can rule the galaxy together, right?
Well, and there's also a fear because he knows that Palpatine will kill Luke if Luke doesn't go to the dark side.
Exactly. Right? So you know, better his son survive and be with him than a dead body.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very interesting take. I think the final kind of thing on that is, like, the Sith seem to embrace emotion as just a natural thing, right? It's not a question of good or bad. It just is.
Yeah.
And because of that natural state, and, you know, you have those people that might argue, like, human evolution and, like, we should strive to be better. But it could be that the Sith are just embracing what's there, what already exists. And, you know, like, fear, passion, emotion, love, hate, all of these things just come naturally to us. And they don't see a reason that they should have to change, right? It's it's what kept them alive and powerful so far. Why, you know, why is it wrong necessarily, right? Why is feeling, you know, and good and bad emotions, right? Why should they try to purge that from themselves like the Jedi try to teach? So that's another aspect, is like, could it just be a neutral force, you know? And they just embrace an animalistic view of the world and of themselves, and they're just like, this is nature, this is normal.
Yeah.
And this is freedom, right? Absolute freedom.
Yeah, I could kind of see that view. I would imagine there's a lot of different, within the Sith, there's a lot of different schools of thought, and maybe I'll have to like research this a bit more, but I know there's like, the big one is like the rule of two. That's like, that seems to be the only like consistent Sith philosophy.
Yeah, and it's very dominant for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you could imagine there might be like smaller sects of Sith who kind of have, maybe just like there are Jedi, right? Who have kind of
their own interpretation.
Yeah, exactly. So I do wonder if there is like, if there's, yeah, more of that deviation from the sort of grand narrative that the Sith have.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for that interesting discussion about the Sith. And to our listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Join us next time for our next Star Wars topic in the Star Lores. Thanks for listening.
Peace out.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Are you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder?
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to give the show a 5-star rating and review, and give us a follow on social media. This episode was produced and edited by me, Jordan Swaim, written and directed by Christian Lutz and Sam Swaim. All original music was scored and recorded by my music project, Farewell to Shadowland.
Thanks for flying with us. We are interested to hear from you. You can reach us at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts, comments, or corrections. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating, review, and subscribe. You can also help us out through our Patreon at The Star Lores Podcast. Find us on Instagram, The Star Lores Podcast, on Facebook at The Star Lores Podcast, on Twitter at The Star Lores Podcast, and on YouTube, Star Lores Podcast. We'll catch you next time.